As the healthcare industry moves closer to full-scale implementation of health information exchanges and integrated delivery networks, the call for data integrity and interoperability standards has grown increasingly louder to help ensure that data quality isn't compromised so physicians and patients have complete confidence in the information reflected by their electronic health records. The proliferation of healthcare electronic health records and the transition of data across health information exchanges opens the door to data corruption, and as these systems become larger and more complex, vulnerabilities will grow. In most other industries, data integrity is just as important, but corruption errors can often be rectified and mistakes fixed. In healthcare, it often becomes a matter of life or death. One of the primary concerns with maintaining data integrity is implementing a consistent approach across the health information exchange to matching patients with their data. Both physicians and patients have to trust and rely that data is complete, current, accurate, and secure. Escalating the complexity of health information exchanges as more networks are added and more data is fed into the system will only necessitate a concentrated effort by the entire industry to produce common standards that foster confidence data stays intact. The ultimate solution to maintaining end-to-end data integrity doesn't originate from one company, but must be a collective and cost-effective effort from all healthcare providers across the industry. We recently spoke with John Donnelly, president of Interpro Solutions in Colonia, New Jersey, and an expert in healthcare technology standards, interoperability, and innovation about data integrity and data standardization protocols in the context of the shift to electronic medical records and the subsequent data sharing across health information exchanges. The following podcast is a recording of our conversation.
Hi, this is John Trader with M2Sys Technology. Today we are really happy to have John Donnelly, who is the president of Interpro Solutions out of Colonia, New Jersey. And John is here today to talk to us about data interoperability in healthcare and some other issues. And just to give you a little bit of a background, for over 35 years, John has been instrumental in the development and implementation of information technology solutions in a variety of industries. In 1994, John established an independent consulting business focused on the development and publication of health IT interoperability standards and the adoption of these standards by all levels of care provider entities and health information organizations in support of achieving the new interoperable quality-based delivery paradigm. Commencing in 2010, John serves also as HIMSS, which is the Healthcare Information Systems Society, strategic advisor on the topic of healthcare interoperability throughout the world and the effective testing and demonstration thereof in national and international venues. To promote innovation in the HIT solutions within the industry, John also serves as the operations director of the New Jersey Healthcare Innovation Center, which is a collaboration of the state's Information Technology University and its largest care delivery network. John has also been a speaker on the subjects of healthcare technology standards, interoperability, and innovation at annual and regional healthcare conferences, and also an author in publications sponsored by the Healthcare Information Systems Society, better known as HIMSS, the Society of Imaging Informatics and Medicine, and also the Medical Record Institute, as well as at conferences sponsored by medical colleges and associations for specific clinical disciplines. John serves on the board of IHE International, a leading standards development organization promoting health information exchange worldwide, and is a lead on a number of initiatives sponsored by the HHS Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT, known as ONC. John has also been involved in a lot of different projects and initiatives that surround standards and interoperability for healthcare data, and has a lot of experience in this field. So we're very, very honored to have John with us today to talk about this topic. Welcome, John.
Thank you, John, and thank you for that introduction. It's interesting to hear some of the things that I've been involved in over the years.
I just wanted to ask you, just out of curiosity, how did you land in healthcare? I know based on your bio that you have experience in some other industries. What is your passion for healthcare, specifically interoperability issues and how they relate to health IT?
Well, the roots of that decision actually come from the company I was working with at the time. It was Siemens, and those that know the company, the German company, is basically in anything that makes electronics and electricity or uses electronics and electricity. And had to make a decision along the career line to just pick an industry that they were in. And the interesting thing is that I was coming at it from the IT side, and as I saw the developments of medical devices in the IT space, the medical device space, it became more and more apparent that there was going to be a merger of device information sourcing as well as electronic systems and replacement of paper records and the computer and medicine just got joined at the hip. This was back in the mid-80s. And with that, it became kind of an immediate, a transition for me and a passion to take that to its utmost and try to figure out how do we get technology to be leveraged as much as possible in the industry.
Great. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. What we've done is we've developed a list of questions for John, and they are surrounded on the topic of data interoperability in healthcare. As most of our listeners know, recently we've seen the federal government providing healthcare with initiatives to move towards more of an electronic medical record format, and some of those have been very instrumental in pushing these healthcare providers towards more of an electronic data storage model. And with the move towards electronic medical records, of course, there's a lot of issues that come up with data interoperability and data integrity. And John, being an expert, we'd like to just kind of explore this topic a little bit more in depth with him and ask him some specific questions about his opinions and his insight on where is healthcare heading in terms of data interoperability and data integrity in the new healthcare electronic medical record paradigm. We're going to start off, John, by asking you, what major challenges do hospitals and healthcare providers face as they begin to share patient data across health information exchanges and integrated delivery networks?
Yeah, John, I think the best answer for this is to kind of split the thought into two avenues. I mean, if we look at it from a technical perspective or technology perspective, some of the things that come to the surface right away are one is patient identification. It's not something that entities generally had to worry about outside their four walls or their enterprise. Now it becomes a big topic, and we'll speak more to that, I think, as we talk more, but it became something that was a nonchalant thing of registration to something that now has implications. Some other things in the technology area is the idea that you may have to deal with data that you didn't source. So how do you identify that, and how is that segmented in your medical record systems? And last but not least is the fact that data looking at our devices that we have, our smartphones, our tablets, etc., it's starting to become much more mobile, more portable. So how do you deal with that from a security standpoint, but also an information exchange? The other side is kind of from the business side. And there, if you look at the medical professionals in the industry, they have to deal with a new kind of patient record data ownership situation. Who does own this record if it's now been sourced by multiple people? It was very easy when it was in their cabinet. Now it's a little different. They have to look at, maybe their way of treatment. They have to consider a kind of a team medicine idea, especially in primary care, where they may have to have some patient treatment coordination activities and workflows that they didn't have to do. And lastly there, I think what we'll see as we start to go more electronic is we'll see more data analytics, health data analytics being available, and good health data analytics. We've had analytics in the past. I don't think they were grounded in really good metrics, good values, good numbers. I think that going forward, as we start to get more electronic, this is what's going to help the industry with some of its decision making.
Okay. Just having, kind of moving on a little bit with the same idea in terms of health systems. What, with the pressure to conform with health information exchange requirements, what changes have you seen health systems make to their strategic vision of quality healthcare?
Yeah, I think for starters, let's make sure we understand when we say health system, what we're talking about here. You know, for me, a health system covers all aspects of care delivery. So you have your hospital, you know, your acute care, ambulatory, long-term care, post-acute care, emergency department, et cetera. So right there, you have quite a myriad of settings here that you need to deal with. But what we'll see is that initially, it was almost a knee-jerk reaction to meaningful use. Right, that came out, and everybody said, "Oh, Jesus, I got to do this." Nobody wants to leave money on the table, so you know we have to make sure we do that. So that all of a sudden bubbled to the surface. But I think as they started to think through it, they realized it's just a stimulus. It's meant to try to motivate the industry to think differently and to change, you know, how they capture their information and share it. So that means from an IT standpoint, they started to now look at, do a good assessment of their system partners. Who are their partners? What value do they bring? So they started to reassess that. I think that they started to also look at the professionals that are serving their organization and to identify and hone a good care team, you know, for their specific patient populations. And so they started to see, well, gee, you know, how do they ensure a bond between the care team members that they want and versus others maybe that they don't feel are important. And lastly, I think what we're going to see is that they, as organizations, need now to really look closely at what differentiates themselves from their peers. If we're in an information sharing paradigm, ownership and seclusion of information is no longer the option to leverage. So now you have to say, well, what is? You know, what makes me better than the next guy? Where am I weak? Where am I strong?
Okay, great. You mentioned a couple of things in there. Ownership, data ownership, I know is one of the problems, I guess, that arises from the birth of health information exchanges. Let me ask you a question, though, about data visibility. There's been a lot of talk about the fact that moving to an electronic medical record format will allow many more patients to have access to their own medical records so that they can have more of a say in their healthcare, more of an impact in the healthcare that's delivered to them. Just following along those lines of patient empowerment, as well as on the provider side, releasing information that previously may have been difficult to access, and speaking specifically about electronic medical records, how do you feel that data visibility will change the patient-provider relationship?
Well, I think we have to consider the patient now as a partner. I mean, so if we think of the provider's role changing from being less directive and more collaborative, then we're also going to see that the kind of assumed patient commitment that they have, right? They assume that a patient is taking and following the medicines and the treatment that's been prescribed. It's going to become more explicit. I think it's not only going to be a one-sided change that the provider is now going to see something or have to change on their side. I think that the patient now is going to have to understand that ownership of data or participation in data integrity means they have to step up for that. It's their responsibility to help do that. And I think that at the end of the day, it's the right direction. It just means that we're going to see a much more collaborative dialogue there. And I think we saw initially there was kind of a reaction to health information being available on the web, and patients all of a sudden showed up at the doctor's doorstep with printouts and said, you know, what can you tell me about this? And I think we went through that era a little bit, or maybe we're still towards the end of that, but now we're seeing much more provider-directed web guidance. So as opposed to opposing that information resource, the providers have said, hey, how do we leverage this, but let's make sure that they're getting good information that we can be a good mentor, to how do they do that. So I do think that it is in the right direction, but it is definitely a change in the relationship, probably as one of the fundamental revisions to the environment.
Great, thank you. You touched earlier, John, on patient identification. You mentioned that previously it may not have received as much attention or as much of a focus by healthcare providers as it does now. How does patient identification affect data integrity in healthcare information exchange?
Well, to use someone else's phraseology here, it's job one. It really has become critical to the process. And what we are seeing as we start to stand up these electronic environments is that processes that were very, nonchalantly handling patient registration and identification are now becoming mission critical. They are now becoming something that is the fundamental building block for which all the data is now collected and organized, and who has access to it, and why do they have access to it. And so we're seeing from a patient identification side what we might have considered as, and also from the access rights as to who can see things, we might see something that was a simple set of demographics and with a simple password. Now we're going to see things where we're going to be expecting that there's a little bit more involvement, what we might call a two-factor or a three-factor, and to use the security jargon here, that raises the bar of insurance that the individual that we're talking about and the individual that is interacting with this information is indeed that person. And ultimately when we talk three-factor, we're talking things like biometrics and scans and fingerprints and palm things and all this stuff that's going on. And I think that we're going to see things that are going to be a necessary component of registration processes. One of the stories I hear all the time is when you take any of these hospital systems that are in inner cities and in the urban areas, there's definitely some names and demographics that show up repeatedly, and I think there's going to be a real challenge there to make sure that identification is right on the money. What we see and what we read in some of the medical press is about this personalized medicine idea. Well, you certainly don't want to be doing a personalized medicine algorithm when you really don't know that you're dealing with the same exact person. So,
right. You had mentioned biometrics as a newer patient identification technology that's being used by hospitals and healthcare facilities increasingly more and more. Are there any other patient identification technologies that you've seen in your travels or come across that you think also have promise outside of biometric patient identification?
I think the only ones that I have seen that have been used is not even that far along. It's more, I think, is what is called the two-factor, where there's a token of some sort, where there's a validation of what somebody has on their person. So it's not quite moved to the biometrics, and that's one that I think I've seen be deployed as a way. And I think we also see some processes changing. If you look at the dispensing of medications in an acute care setting, they now have quite a number of scans. They use the band on the patient. They have a band on the dispenser. They have a band on the provider that's giving the med, and so there is kind of a way to cross check against errors in terms of inaccurate dispensing growing individual. So these are some of the things. I think as we start to see this go more mobile, I think we're going to start seeing the leveraging of things that are happening on the smartphone. And, you know, that could be an easier path than even biometrics.
Okay, great. Thank you for all those comments. Let's talk for a minute a little bit more about health information exchanges and their effects on patients. Obviously, when you bring up the topic of a health information exchange, sometimes it invokes certain feelings in patients that their medical data is out there for everyone to see. Do you see the growing importance of these health information exchanges in healthcare having any effect on state regulations for patient privacy and security, which is increasingly becoming a hot topic around health information exchanges?
Yeah, I think it already has. So that's not a future. That's a current, and probably has been over the last couple of years. I think for one thing, I know we always tend to lump privacy and security together as if you know their solution is homogenous. They are quite different to resolve. I think from a technological standpoint, and you know for me, security is the easier one. I mean that's kind of can be resolved by some pretty good existing technology around standards and, you know, ensuring encryption and a variety of things of exchange that we can do. We do secure exchanges in other industries today. So I'm not too worried that we won't be able to do secure exchanges. So the security side, I think, is resolvable. The privacy one is somewhat that's a little unique to healthcare. And on the privacy side, we will definitely see many, many dialogues around, for starters, the benefits of an opt-in approach versus an opt-out approach. And states have been discussing this now pretty heavily for the last couple of years. And there are arguments on both sides. And one seems to be coming from the deployment side, saying that opt-in is harder to deploy, but yet the opt-in enthusiasts say, hey, you know, if we would just leverage that as a way for awareness of process and awareness of the new program to the patient and combine that with that dialogue, then you'll find that a very high percentage of the patients are going to opt in, so you're not really at risk. But we see it on both sides. Opt-out seems to be one that says, hey, we can stand up something and get it going without a lot of you know upfront dialogue with the patients, which is really what we want because we want to have something to demonstrate so that if they ask questions, we can say, hey, this is an example of how we can do it. But I think we're definitely going to see legislation to try to address the challenge around that decision. I see two things happening. One, we are going to have to think about state boundaries. We can't be jeopardizing those patients that are living on the borders of states because one state's decided to go one path, another one another path. Mm-hmm. That would be totally total insanity. And second, we have to come up with a way that we can share a consent and patient preference input across those boundaries or whatever regions that need to that have providers that are serving that patient and not have this be something that, you know, like we're seeing today in the paper world where every time you go into a doctor's office you have to fill out, you know, another set of demographics as if, you know, you never were anywhere else on this planet. So mm-hmm. So we have to do a little better job of the consent exchange. But I think we can do it. It's just that it is going to take some change, and some of it is going to need legislative change.
Okay, I know you mentioned opt-in and opt-out earlier in the answer to that previous question. I know that health information exchanges typically allow patients to opt out or are operating in opt-out states, potentially lowering the quality of data. What do you feel are the primary benefits that patients should be educated on about the importance of health information exchanges?
Well, the ones that are the challenging ones are not the ones at the opt-out states. They're the opt-in states. So, and we have a little bit of both, because the opt-in states are saying, you know, you can't exchange anything until they've actually had that dialogue and you've got that consent. I think that the main thing here is, one, to ensure that the patient is aware that this is happening. And I think this is one of the biggest arguments that the opt-in enthusiasts have. They say, look, we need to get the patient empowered. We need to get them engaged in this. So we need to make sure that they understand that this is going on and what impact that might have on their ability to share or their provider's ability to share their medical information with another provider in their interest. And even though HIPAA doesn't prevent that, HIPAA says, you know, in the interest of care delivery, they have the right to do it. We're now kind of putting this consent component, you know, on top of that, because we have an electronic exchange. It's not, you know, I've seen it happen a lot of times. As soon as you automate things, and then right away, things that happened in the manual world, you know, kind of get new visibility, new attention. But I do think that they're going to have to know what's there. They also have to understand that the net result of this is that it will be a better care delivery model. It's intended to improve the care coordination. They understand, and I think most patients understand, that they're not treated by one physician in their life. They have a care team that has to take care of different things, and I think we're going to see more and more of that. So I think the fact that we want to kind of leverage this care knowledge across many people, I think is another point of education that they need to understand. And lastly, I'm going to come back to this patient identity thing. I think that the patient needs to be that control point. They have to make sure that their identification is consistent across the board with their providers. And, you know, I've heard the pushback that says, well, sometimes patients intentionally, you know, don't want to be identified as the same person. But, you know, I think that's going to come back. That's going to be an exception, not the rule. But I think if the patient understands how important this is, that their identity, that their registration information needs to be consistent, and the fact that it will be available from one to the other will make that that a lot easier. The main message in terms of what is going on, I think, is relatively simple, and it's that the industry is trying to move from a sickness model to a wellness model, and you know, that means that the patient, one, has to be more engaged, because it's a matter of them being well, not only showing up when they have a cold or a disease or a procedure to be done, but they are participating in maintaining their health. And you know, I think if they think about that, I don't think we're going to see a lot of pushback with them wanting to participate.
Let me ask you a question about health literacy. John, I know that this isn't your area of expertise, but I know that you have direct experience in working on issues that may surround on the periphery the idea of health literacy. When you open up health information vis-a-vis electronic medical records or other electronic formats to patients so they have greater access to not only their own medical records, but more of a solid platform of communication with their provider or any other people within the network that are providing them care. I've been reading recently about health data literacy, and I guess what I wanted to ask you is, there's a difference between making information available to a patient so that they can read through and understand more about their own health condition and perhaps some of others and how that may affect them. But what are Or are hospitals and medical facilities doing anything to help patients to understand the data? I know that it's being provided to them so that they can read it, but have you, in your travels or conversations with other people, seen any educational pushes by healthcare facilities to help patients to understand more about what their medical records actually say and how to interpret the information?
Yeah, John, I haven't seen it at the institutional level per se, except in one regard of patient portal and directing a patient to a good web resource for information. But I do know of some standards that are on the horizon that has to do with access to a knowledge base, a knowledge resource that is intended to be focused on patient level education and literacy. It's different than what's out there from the medical journals, as you correctly indicated. It's intended to take this medical jargon and interpret it into patientese. What we're going to see, I think, in the not too distant future is systems that maybe a personal health record system, or even systems that that might be available on the web and with directed entry points through the provider organizations. But I think we'll start to see lexicons around medical terminology that are able to bring it into something that is more readable and understandable by patients. It's not going to happen overnight, so we're going to see some iterative build on this. But I think it's a very important part of the idea of patient empowerment. We certainly have to look at the full population mix that we are dealing with, and we have to understand that we have to be able to accommodate and get everybody up to the right level of literacy for their needs.
That's a great point, John. One of the things that I've been reading about recently that goes along with those great comments that you just made was the fact that I believe that one of the theories behind moving towards an electronic medical record format for healthcare was obviously to help everyone in the aggregate. But I know that oftentimes you might find maybe a lower income demographic or those who may not have access to their electronic medical records vis-a-vis the internet or other electronic means could benefit the most from seeing that type of information. So it'll be interesting to see how the healthcare industry approaches that and is able to possibly set up maybe a public, you mentioned portals, patient portals, which are excellent sources of information for patients to read more about their own healthcare. But it'll be interesting to see how healthcare sort of maybe tries to reach out to that that lower income demographic, or maybe those who don't have access to electronic means to be able to see their electronic information, their electronic medical records. So thanks for those comments. I know that wasn't something we were planning on talking about, but I do appreciate you chipping in with that. And let me kind of move on to another question. Let me ask you, what do you think some of the major challenges involved with ensuring data integrity and interoperability as more hospitals acquire healthcare practices and clinics? So talking about mergers and acquisitions, what do you think some of the major challenges are as more of these hospitals merge and partner together when it comes to data integrity and interoperability?
Well, initially, I'd say, they have the same problem that they used to have, right? I mean, hospitals per se have typically had a pretty high level of automation, at least in this country, and any time they would be acquired or acquiring another system, there's a pretty heavy duty assessment of the systems and how do you merge the data together and things like that. But now we see other kinds of acquisitions and partnering, and that has to do with ambulatory systems coming under the wing of acute care systems and IDNs being formed, etc. And as a result, you're now dealing with different flavors of how data is retained. And the only thing I can think is that we have to now try to leverage these interoperability standards as the linchpin. If we can move the industry to having standard way of exchanging across all those boundaries, then the merger and acquisition process should be a little bit easier, because they should be able to have a vehicle, to actually move a patient's information in a more efficient fashion, and maybe they were already doing it because this particular entity that they acquired was one that was in their circle of friends, or one that was of a medical discipline that was a collaborative effort for best practice development or something. So I think as we start to see standards of interoperability be embraced, I think that the M&A thing would actually become a little bit easier to accomplish from a technology or a data support side.
We've been speaking with John Donnelly, the president of Interpro Solutions out of Colonia, New Jersey. And John is an expert in healthcare data interoperability issues, especially with the new shift for the healthcare industry towards electronic medical records. John, I want to thank you for your time today. I appreciate all of the feedback and insight that you gave us on the questions that we had for you. And we really just appreciate you spending some time with us today.
John, my pleasure. I think as we all become quite passionate in how do we make this transformation work for us all, I think it'd be a fun ride, but one with some challenges as well.